Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner again, and that was Ryan Harvey, a friend of our producer Mark Gunnery, who wrote a song called Christiana, has really interesting verses to it, about this Christiana rebellion. And joining us in the studio is Lisa Crowley, who's Resource Center Manager at the Reginald Effluce Museum of African American History and Culture, who brings us our Black History Baltimore moments. Good to have you in the studio, Lisa.
Good morning, Mark. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. And you all can join us out there, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can also log on to our Facebook pages, and of course you can tweet us at Mark Steiner. We'd love to hear from you during the course of the conversation. If you're at all familiar with, and even if you're not familiar with, what happened on this September the 11th in 1851, the Christiana Rebellion. I always think of it as the other September 11th, because it really was a hugely significant factor. And you were going to raise it, and we said, let's have this conversation about it instead.
Absolutely. The Christiana resistance occurred on this day. It was actually a Thursday morning.
It was a Thursday morning. Absolutely.
It was early Thursday morning in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. It became one of the pivotal events in the fight against slavery. On that early Thursday morning, Edward Gorsuch, he was a 56-year-old Maryland slave owner. He appears at the home of William Parker, demanding his four slaves. Edward Gorsuch wasn't alone. He was with six people. There was his son Dickinson, a cousin, nephews, and the U.S. Marshal from Philadelphia, Henry Klein.
Right.
And so he appears demanding those slaves. Those slaves were not nameless and faceless. We know their names. They were Noah Bailey, age 24, Nelson Ford, age 23, Eli Ford, age 26, Charles Ford, age 28, George Hammond, age 24, and Joshua Hammond, age 20.
And they were from the Retreat Farm, the plantation here in Baltimore County.
Yes.
That's where they fled from. Edward Gorsuch's plantation in Baltimore County.
Correct. Many of his slaves he had actually obtained from a will through the death of one of his uncles. And so they were all male, and they were all serving terms of manumission. So when this happened, he was actually very surprised, because he saw himself as a so-called
enlightened slave master.
Yes, Mark, as an enlightened slave master. But what is a enlightened slave master if you're a slave?
Right.
You know? And so he thought, because they were serving their terms of manumission and that they would eventually be free, they would never escape. And so they escape. And he receives a letter a few weeks earlier from a Lancaster County farmer telling him that his slaves are being held in the home of William Parker. William Parker is a free black man, but he was an ex-slave from Maryland,
right,
from Anne Arundel County, from the Rodown Farm. That home still stands in Anne Arundel County. Parker had been in Lancaster County now for about 10 years or more. He had escaped in 1839 with his brother, so he was settled. He had married Eliza Howard. She was an escaped slave from Maryland, and they had been living there. He had been serving on a local vigilance committee.
Right. He had actually formed a self-defense committee to defend runaway slaves, people who had been saved who ran away from the enslavers trying to get them to take them back to slavery. And he had this whole self-defense force that was built in that area.
Absolutely. And he had actually been involved with them for 10 years, since 1841.
Right.
And so when Gorsuch shows up with the marshal, William Parker stands his ground and says, I'm not giving you those slaves. A heated conversation ensues. Eliza hears this commotion, his wife. It says that she's on the second floor, and she opens a window on the second floor and blows this horn.
And one of the things about that particular incident, just two quick things about that, about Eliza, and come back to William Parker for a moment, interesting pieces about their own personal history, is that when this happened, a hail of bullets was going into the house when Eliza Parker went to grab the horn, despite the hail of bullets, to alert all the other people in the militia to come in and defend their home. So that was a very brave act on her part.
Correct, correct. And she was shot at.
And
so all these men, all these armed men, then basically make their way onto Parker's property. Some of the numbers that are given, you know, some accounts say there were 40 men. Some say they were 50. Some go as high as 100. It is an interracial group. Lancaster County at that time has about 3,000 free African Americans. and most of them are armed, although some of them are unarmed. One of the first men to appear is Parker's next-door neighbor, Castor Hanaway.
Who's a Quaker.
Further research has actually shown that he wasn't a Quaker. He was a sympathizer, but technically he was not a Quaker. But Gorsuch sees another familiar white face and expects him to help him. And Hanaway says, "You better leave before things get ugly." And at that, within minutes, gunfire goes off. And there's this huge fight. And in the end, Gorsuch is found dead with bullets. He dies from bullet wounds. And his son Dickinson lays critically wounded.
And some interesting pieces of this, just going to set back, when William Parker escaped from slavery, and he was accosted by enslavers on the road, people to take him back, this is a man who always stood up and resisted.
Yes.
When they went to take him, Parker had a branch in his hand, and he attacked the men who looked like they were going for a gun in his pants, and Parker broke the arm of the man attempting to re-enslave him, and then they fled on. So Parker always had this history of standing up for himself and became a literate man, though many of the people in this thing were not literate. And it was interesting, when Dickinson was shot, the son of Gorsuch, it was actually freedmen and some of the white folks around who brought Dickinson back to health. They mended him until he could go home.
Right.
Despite the fact that he was there to re-enslave them.
Right. And another thing with Parker, he not only assisted in helping runaways, it's said that they also brought threats to people who were turning slaves in. So he not only had the reputation of helping people, but also, trying to make inroads with people who were turning people in. And so in the aftermath of this, Parker escapes with two other people. He makes his way to Norristown, Pennsylvania. From Norristown, Pennsylvania, they get to the Poconos. From the Poconos, they go to New York, to New Rochelle, to Rochester. From Rochester, they go on to Buxton, Canada.
And it was Frederick Douglass who helped them in their escape.
Once he got to Rochester,
right,
New York,
right.
Correct.
Right.
And then Eliza Parker follows with her sister and others about 2 weeks later, and she makes it safely to Buxton, Canada. And Buxton, Canada is this haven for free blacks.
So the biggest piece of this we need to talk about also is this conspiracy trial that took place. When I researched this a few years back and I went and pulled all the microfiche out, this was the headlines in every paper in the United States of America. The president of Millard Fillmore at the time railed against the people, Parker and the rest, saying these people needed to be put on trial. Would have been the largest conspiracy trial in the history of the United States up to that point of black and white men on trial for defying the Fugitive Slave Act of 1851. And I think that that's a really big piece of this. And Thaddeus Stevens defended the first defendant.
Castor Hanaway, exactly. And the trial itself took place in Philadelphia in November of 1851. It took place over 18 days. They say the courtroom was packed. It was standing room only.
And there's a piece I just want to read here for people to get a sense of what that time was like, because the Constitution at that time legalized slavery.
Yes.
Let me read the clause from the Constitution just for our listeners' interest. The right to own slaves was guaranteed by the Constitution. It was Article 4, Section 2, Clause 3. It said, "No person held to service or labor in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another, shall, in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered upon claim of the party to whom such service or labor must be due." So that, is in our Constitution that slavery was enshrined.
Yes. And there's the Fugitive Slave Act of 1793, and then there's the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. And the later Slave Act gave slave owners the right to go into free territory to reclaim their property. After 18 days, the verdict is handed down, and Castor Hanaway is found not guilty of treason. There were 38 black men who were also charged and 5 white men who were charged, and virtually all those charges were dropped. And so it's a huge victory for abolition.
I'm sorry, before we have to go, because we're going to our next piece coming up, a piece I want to put out here, a couple of interesting stories of this, that Gorsuch's youngest son was in boarding school in Baltimore County at the time, and his roommate was John Wilkes Booth.
Wow.
Who then was so in angered by this and angered by what the freedmen tried to do, he was like such an advocate for slavery and against freedom that this particular incident and the killing of when his roommate's father was killed, Edward Gorsuch, this really got him moving and pushed that Gorsuch son to become a Confederate, while the other Gorsuch son, who was at Christiana, became an officer in the Union Army afterwards. So it was a major split there. And William Parker himself, when he came back for the celebration in the 1870s, I don't have the exact date in my head, was murdered. And people think he was murdered by the assumption being murdered by people in Christiana who were angered by his participation in the freedmen movement, even though this was way after folks were freed from enslavement. So there's a lot of twists to this story.
There are. Eliza Parker lives the rest of her life in Canada. She is buried there, and there was a huge marker put at her site, and now many people go to visit it. Canadian papers covered this event last year, and you can see pictures, if you go online, of their family.
So this is a piece we will do more of. I think it's a very important piece of our history that we can't forget. I'm so glad that we had a chance to really do this. I mean, I think that people don't understand the significance of this moment in history, and how many of these really took place. These moments in American history that were not, people not understanding that black folks in America took their own agency for their fight for freedom. It wasn't always kind of the white people running, which is what kind of our history shows. And this was a very significant moment in American history, I think.
And it's a part of a long line of that whole resistance. Herbert Aptheker has documented about 250 slave rebellions, a rebellion being defined as involving 10 people or more. And so there is this long documented history, but we often don't talk about that. And most people don't know about it. So there's a rich treasure trove of stories out there to explore.
I mean, I think also these little pieces of this are also to remember that the fact that there were 3,000 people who were formerly enslaved, who lived in what they called the Wild West, they called it, this rough and tumble place of southeastern Pennsylvania, where Carlisle and Lancaster were, and that these were men and women who, when they got to their freedom in southeastern Pennsylvania, resisted and fought for their freedom and were organized, highly organized, and were not about to go back into slavery.
Absolutely. And again, when Gorsuch had gotten there, Parker had been defending and assisting slaves for 10 years. And so they were ready for this fight.
And, there's Thaddeus Stevens, the congressman, whose common law wife, Lydia Smith, was an African-American woman. And he was a U.S. congressman whose home was part of the Underground Railroad, was the guy who led the defense.
Yes.
In this conspiracy trial.
Yes. Yes. And there were many abolitionists who were present in the courtroom during that time. It also led John Greenleaf Whittier to write a poem about the Christiana event.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you here. It's Lisa Crawley. It's great to have you in the studio.
It's nice to be here, Mark.
Thank you so much for this conversation on Christiana Rebellion. And we will put, I'll give to my producer after the program all the links to Christiana, the books, the documents, and you can see for yourselves this incredibly important, the other 9/11, September 11th, 1851, in defiance of the Fugitive Slave Act in America. Lisa Crawley, who is a resource center manager at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture, joins us as we always reflect on African American local history. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We are going out here with what's called The Slave's Lament, written by the 19th century Scottish poet Robert Burns, tells the story of a man taken from his home in Senegal and sold into slavery in Virginia. We'll be right back as we talk about this incredible town meeting that took place in Baltimore with some of his participants. Stay with us.
I am weary, weary, oh, on that charming.